Well, we're back. It's a wet-ish and somber post-daylight savings change Monday.
Not the... At least it's slightly less dreary than if it was all out raining, but...
Sure.
Yeah. This is the sad daylight savings.
As sad as it can be when it's 70 and sunny outside.
Oh, it was a little overcast today for that, you know.
Oh, for the first part of the day, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have no idea. 90-something. I think we finally got our audio fixed. I should have said it out loud.
Things are going to go sideways.
One of these days. I'm telling you, before 100, we won't have... Anyway, moving right along. How is everybody?
I'm doing pretty good. It's, the usual recording day. You know, I'm here. Monday is always one of the tougher days of the week, I think.
You know what? Monday was a tougher day, and I want to compliment you, gentlemen. Monday was a tough day, and now I look forward to Monday, because Monday night, you get to sit down and record and talk video games for, like, an hour and change.
It's a good way to close out the worst day of the work week.
Yes.
Wait, hold on. Thursday is the worst day of the work week.
No.
No.
Really? Wednesday?
No.
Somewhere in the middle has to be the worst. It can't be the first.
Every Wednesday, I always have the thought, it's all downhill from here to the weekend.
Like, actually downhill because nobody does any work or they're late or...
Well, no, you're halfway through, right? Come lunch on Wednesday, you're halfway through the week. In our office, half the office is out on any given Friday anyway because of the alternating Fridays off schedule. So, it's almost more than halfway because it's so quiet at the end of the week.
I agree with your opinion, but for a slightly different reason. I feel like the amount of work that happens at my work is so variable some weeks that you never know whether it's going to be an extremely hectic week or a really like laid back one until you get in on that Monday and have the first like, you know, talk with the higher ups or whatever. And once you have that meeting, you know, at like 10 o'clock on Monday morning or whatever, then it's like, okay, now I can align my priorities for the entire rest of the week.
So your problem with Mondays is anticipation?
Yeah. And that's like not, there's no solution to that, right?
I feel like that's got to help too with the enjoyment of the weekends. Cause if you don't know where you're going to be until Monday morning, there's no sense in worrying about anything.
And that's not always the case, right? Sometimes, sure. If the project is longer term or whatever, but in recent times, at least, it has been very up and down.
Well, I think I lose the show of hands test, and the pod official position is Mondays. I hate Mondays, I guess.
We're a bunch of regular old Garfields over here.
What's the line from? That's what I was just thinking of. There's got to be a better way to spend 1/7 of your life.
His solution was obesity, but I don't know about that.
Eating a lot of lasagna seems all right.
Okay. Well, I know that it was kind of a rainy weekend out here in the California, and that means video game time. Did we have it?
We did have it.
Yeah, I definitely got up to some of that this weekend.
All right. Well, why don't you hit me? What'd you get with?
Go ahead, Michael. I have a feeling we did something similar.
I believe so. So I dove into some Into the Breach.
The game that we've been talking about, the FTL successor, the mech game, the one that is the hotness.
The one that we were all saying that we were probably going to break down and buy, I broke down and bought. I figured, I've got Steam credit that covers all but a couple of bucks of it, so why not?
Steam credit is dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, but every once in a while.
I've been running Idlemaster trying to build up a little bit of a few pennies on cards. I guess I shouldn't say that. I'll probably get banned, but...
If anyone from Steam is listening, please sponsor us.
I can go ahead and assure you they're not. It's probably fine.
Hey, you know, I heard they're coming out with games again, Valve.
Remains to be seen.
Sure. I mean, it's Gabe Newell announcing the games. But they got that guy from Magic to at least sit in the office and tell them how to make a card game if they wanted to.
Yeah. Who knows, man? That that thing.
I just laughed that in 2018, Gabe Newell is standing in front of people trying to get them hype about their own free-to-play card game 5 years late with a PowerPoint. It's going to be fun. I swear.
Yeah. Look, I'll probably try it because I like Dota, but I am skeptical. Hold on.
Okay, this is not the right way to think about it. We like Magic. And if it's designed by the guy that did Magic and Netrunner and King of Tokyo, then yeah, it's worth trying out. But I don't know that Dota means you should play card games.
Oh, it's like a Dota-themed card game. So
is it 100%?
The original name at the reveal was Artifact, the Dota 2 card game. So,
oh, I just heard Artifact. I didn't hear the Dota 2 card game part. That actually
he revealed it at the International, right? The giant Dota 2 tournament. That was where that thing was revealed.
I really feel like at the International, everyone thought, uh-huh, sure, Gabe. And now that he's had his little PowerPoint, it's kind of like, oh, maybe this thing's happening.
I mean, I don't think anyone thought that it wasn't happening. They just thought it was stupid because the people there didn't want to play a card game. They wanted an actual game, right?
Well, they weren't that Valve sponsorship Michael was hoping for.
Oh, well.
Sorry.
All right. Well, back on track. How is Into the Breach? Because I'm still sitting here playing FTL trying to stop myself because my cards have not come in to pay for the game.
Well, it's excellent to start with, but it is also addictive and unforgiving.
I was going to say that it's just really hard, but I think Michael said it a little better.
Is it hard in the way that, because I dialed it back on FTL. I was trying to do normal again, and then I realized like 3 or 4 runs in, I was like, oh no, I always played this game on easy. Because there's no benefit really actually to playing it on anything but easy. Except bragging rights, like you still unlock everything on easy. You don't have to play on normal or hard to unlock things. Is it FTL hard where you're just like, I cannot cope with this? Or is it like brain bender hard? Like I can do this, but I don't believe in myself.
I would say that it's definitely, so the same things that you were saying kind of apply here. It is much, the game is, you can still unlock things and, get the achievements and stuff in this game on easy. Normal is, at least it feels significantly harder in my opinion. I was able to get past the final mission on easy, once, but I have not even come close yet on normal.
Okay. See, I dove straight into normal. Just to see if I could do it. And I managed to just barely squeak out an end game, a 2-island victory.
Okay, maybe we should run through the trajectory of the game or the structure a little bit for people that aren't familiar.
Sure. So the game opens up and you pick a pilot. And to start with, there's only one. And then you can put him into one of 3 vehicles. And to start with, you only have the default squad. And there is you have a tank and you have a ranged unit. And then you have heavy mobile artillery, I guess is the best way to describe the third one. It's a tank.
You have like
it's a howitzer.
You have a punchy mech, you have an artillery kind of gun cannon with an arc, and you have a tank that just shoots in a straight line. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so to open up, you have one island that you can go to, and there are one or two missions that are available for you to choose from the start, and each mission is set up on a square grid. Is it
10 by 10? 8 by 8.
An 8 by 8 grid. And so you position your mechs in among the structures on one side of the island. And the enemy called the Vec emerge from the ground on the other side. And the chess match starts.
Chess match?
And I think chess match is a great way to describe it. because similar to chess, and we talked about this a little bit the last time we covered Into the Breach, but there's no hidden information in this game, right? You can click on every unit, see exactly how much damage it's going to do, which tiles exactly are going to be affected by its attack, and any special effects or whatever on that unit are there for you to see.
And you were saying there was a way to see everybody's moves.
Right. There's a little button in the corner or something that you can either hover over or click on, and it will put numbers on everything, including like environmental effects and map specific things that happen, so that you know exactly which order these things are going to trigger in, so that you can set up your little chess pieces and make like your little dominoes and knock this thing into that thing, which gets hit by this and then attacked by the fire and then eventually gets killed at the end of the line by his own guy or whatever. And setting up that little puzzle to make all those things work is the heart of the game, essentially.
And it's really satisfying when you line everything up just right.
I definitely feel like I have spent turns where I just leave it open on my screen and sit and stare at it for like 10 minutes or more doing nothing. And then you think, okay, I'm going to do this. And then you kind of commit your little series of actions and you're like, yes, I can't believe all of it worked out. And then also consequently you have those turns where you do all that thinking and you forgot one thing. And it all goes sideways.
Yep. You got the enemy turn order wrong because you weren't paying enough attention, or you can't fire quite far enough, or you can't move far enough.
You're like, okay, this guy can move here, and then I'll do this, and this all will work out. And then you do the first two steps of that move, and the third guy is like one tile short of where he needs to be. And you're like, oh no.
Is there a way to preview all that stuff so you know, like, he can only move to there?
Yes, there totally is.
Oh, okay.
There totally is. And it's just the case where, like, these mechs both can move 4, but this one can move 3. It says that, but maybe I didn't remember it at the time. And here we are.
Or during your planning phase, you're like, the only way I'm going to get out of this is if they can all do this, and then they can't.
Yeah, some of it is tough because in the move, so you can move and act independently. So you can move a unit but not take its action if you want to move all your pieces around first. But there are a couple of things that make that difficult. You can undo a move right after you've made it, but only right after you've made it. So if you move one piece and then move another, you can't go back and undo the move of the first one, only the second.
I think actually you can move as many pieces as you want as long as you don't take an action. As soon as you take one action, all the pieces can no longer undo anything that they have done before the action. So you can position all your pieces and then go, okay, now I'm ready to take my actions. But sometimes you want to wait to position. You don't want to move them because the movement of other things is going to affect where they're going to be able to move sometimes. So then you need to wait and you can't move them until after that. And that's in the cases when you can get like, I need to slide this enemy over to make a path so this guy can walk through here.
Yep.
Maybe that guy didn't move as far as I thought he would, or this path is like one tile short or something like that.
So there's also one interesting mechanic, which is the reset battle button. Once per battle, yes, you can restart the entire thing. Or is it just the turn?
It's just the turn.
It's just the turn.
Yeah. So like you get to take your chance and then realize that you screwed up. You can reset the turn. As long as you haven't hit end turn, right?
Yes.
So, you make your moves, you realize you're stuck in a place that's just going to lead to some horrible outcome. You once per battle, you can reset the turn and start over from where you were at the beginning of the turn. It doesn't necessarily mean things are going to go better for you if you can't come up with a better strategy, but at least it gives you another shot at thinking about it.
It has saved me a time or two.
Certainly, yeah, you can find out that your moves didn't save the buildings or whatever that you're supposed to protect, and then instead take a turn that protects the buildings and saves your problems for later.
Definitely. Yes. And there are or like you realize that, oh, I didn't realize that this shaded attack was two squares instead of one. So he hit the front guy and that was fine, but the back square also got hit and that was the objective I needed to protect or something like that. And so you're essentially losing the objective, even though maybe you didn't take any, you know, actual damage to your cities or whatever. You could reset to take another chance at finding a way to save that objective also.
Copy that.
Yeah. So JJ, I don't know if you have managed this, but if you complete a perfect island clear, so you hit all your objectives on all the missions, when you finish out the island, they give you an extra reward to select from.
Yeah. So the first, I have done that a couple of times, but again, I've been playing mostly on easy. So it's, it's easier to do those things. And yeah, the first time it happened, I thought they were giving me all of the rewards. Oh. And so I was like, awesome. Wow. I get all this stuff. This is great. And then like I clicked the screen away and didn't realize that I had selected the like least valuable of those rewards.
Oh, no.
Oops. I really would have liked to have selected that pilot. Oh, well.
Yeah. The pilots are good to get. You can, so you either through rewards or through a time pod mechanic that they have, you can pick up extra pilots. And the pilots all have special abilities for the mech that they pilot. So one of the extra pilots I got has the ability to move again after taking an action.
Yes, I have that guy. He's amazing.
Yeah.
And these abilities in very FTL-like fashion require power a lot
the
of the time.
Ones. Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, the better ones do, right? There are some that are, you know, pretty minor things like, oh, this person is unaffected by smoke and webs. And that does not require any power, but something extremely powerful, like being able to move again after shooting. Or there's another one that is, if you don't move, you can shoot twice. Those sorts of things are way too good and therefore require one or even two power sometimes.
So it's kind of, is there like a resource management sim like the FTL has, or is it more just kind of like a static number you have to work with?
No, so you get, at the end of an island, you get the chance to spend any of the resources that you have built up from achieving mission objectives. So you basically, you're trying to keep the power grid from going down on your island. That is the underlying mission objective throughout the game. And so what you can get for completing mission objectives is either more power for your grid. You can get additional reactor cores, which let you, power your special abilities. And then you can get essentially prestige points, which you can spend at a shop at the end of each island.
Right. And the shop then sells things like the reactor cores, which provide extra power per mech, or you can buy new weapons that have different effects than the default ones. You can, in some cases, buy passive abilities, which may or may not require power based on what they do, or pilots, if you want to buy a new or different, more interesting pilot.
Now, it sounded like Michael skipped towards the end of the game. You were saying a two-island thing, but I've heard four islands or something like that.
Yeah, so there are, when you finish the first island, you open up the second, as well as the ability to start on an island of your choosing. So you're not always starting on the same island after you clear it the first time. And there are four total islands on the map. And then the fifth one, which is your final objective, appears after you've cleared at least two.
Right. And so in sort of an FTL-like fashion, once you've completed two full islands, you can go and tackle that final mission, or you can continue to go to other islands and then come to the final mission later. The final mission apparently scales with the amount of islands that you have done, so you're not necessarily saving yourself anything by going to it earlier or later. But I think, you know, just since the other islands, the more islands you do, the stronger the opposition is every time, right? you're making it a little harder for yourself by tackling more of the islands.
What do you gain by doing it?
Well, you get more upgrade points. You get more of those reactor cores to power additional features on your mechs.
Your pilots get stronger. And as they, your pilots can level up based on, there's an experience system too for killing enemies. And they can level up, and as they level up, they gain passive bonuses. Mm-hmm. So you can move farther, or you regain health if you don't move, kind of thing.
Yeah, or some just have, here's an extra innate power, or this one has, you know, an extra 3 defense to your grid in case they accidentally attack your buildings.
Cool.
That kind of stuff. And those, you know, those abilities don't exist on the default pilots until they level up also, right?
Yeah.
And nice. Then, you know, the actual playing of the game is just like this, you know, like a chess match is a really good way to describe it because, like you say, it's completely turn-based. You do your thing, they do their thing, and it goes back and forth. And, you know, even if your pilots die in the you know, or your mech gets completely destroyed, it still is repaired and available for you to be used next game, but the pilot who was flying it might be dead.
Might be, so that you don't automatically lose him.
I think if the mech is actually destroyed, the pilot dies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, if you can keep it alive at 1 health or something, you can use the pilot next time. The damage is not persistent. It's only in the map. So as soon as it goes back out to the map, everyone heals back to full. You know, but your experience carries over. So if your pilot dies, you lose all that experience with him.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But, and so one of the other challenging aspects is you can make a run and you build up your pilot's abilities. But if you get to the point where you don't complete the run, and I think even if you do complete it, you only get to pick one of your 3 pilots to take into the next run.
Yeah, so that's your kind of persistent effect across runs. If you have a fully leveled up pilot, you can take that guy back instead of maybe one of your less leveled up ones and use him to start off with in the next run, which confers a pretty big advantage. But maybe, you know, then he's taking a lot of the experience and you're not leveling up your other teammates, maybe. So it's all, you know, there's a little bit of push and pull there. You want to make sure you're distributing so that all of your pilots can get stronger. You want to use all the mechs, not just your favorite one. I struggle with that, at least.
same here.
You always want to plunk down points in the cool one, right?
Yeah, but then, like, if you just get completely hosed sometime, then you feel really bad when that guy dies.
JJ, do you know, I haven't done the islands out of order. Do you know if that difficulty scales as well?
I don't know. I know that the appearance of the, like, really strong version of the bugs will change. I guess to be clear, if we didn't mention it, the Vec are, like, insect-type enemies. I know where sometimes in the later islands you would see the alpha versions of those bugs as mm-hmm. just like normal enemies. If you go to those islands early on, at least I've only tried it with 3 of the islands. I haven't been to the 4th island yet.
Okay, neither have I.
But the I have gone to the 2nd and 3rd islands first sometimes.
Okay.
And I did not see very many alpha versions of those bugs. So it leads me to think at least that they toned that part of it down. You might still see the other unusual types that aren't present on the other islands. So a little bit of, like, you might still see the ones that leap around, but they're not the, like, high health version of those ones.
Right. Yeah, can I officially lodge my distaste for the you have been webbed mechanic?
Oh my god. So bad.
It's a sign of, like, lose a turn or lose a movement.
So the only RNG in the game is during the enemy move phase. So when the Vec get their turn to move, you don't know where they're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
you can see how far they can move.
Yes,
but you don't know what they're going to choose to do when they get there.
Hmm.
So if you're really concerned and you really, really, really don't want to get webbed, you make sure whatever your guy is out of the range of the webbing guy. But then in some cases, those guys have range that's like gigantic and there's really nothing you can do.
Yeah, the flying ones can move most of the map.
Oof. Yeah, and there's really not much you're going to be able to do in that case. Have you unlocked any of the other squads other than the default one, Michael?
Yes, I have. And I'm gonna blank on. I think I've opened up two actually, but I've only actually tried one of them. It's the one that takes advantage of the smoke mechanic.
All right, I was hoping you were gonna say that because that's the one that I have also unlocked. I unlocked another one after that, but I haven't played with it yet. The Rusting Hulks is the one you're talking about.
Yes,
I think.
That's what they're called.
And those guys are awesome.
Yeah, it's a little difficult to get the synergy of the team down compared to having played with the default team with the Riftwalkers.
Yeah.
Because the move set is totally different. Andy, for instance, one of the three units can't damage enemy units at all.
Whoa. So it's like a support?
Yeah.
Its ability is to push the four squares next to it out by one.
Oh, interesting. Okay. For direct, not
the orthogonal directions. Okay, yeah, right. Yeah, not the diagonals. Yeah. Nothing in this game seems to work on diagonals.
Yet.
That I know of.
It'll be a lot like FTL where you're like, man, there's a lot of empty rooms in this ship, and then they'll do the like a year later big update and all of a sudden a whole bunch of diagonal things will come into play. Or like in FTL, you know, they added a whole bunch more systems to take up those empty rooms.
I hope not.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Based on the way this game works, it would make some of this very difficult if people could act on diagonals. Not that there isn't room for them to add things, but the game plays so differently when you have mechs that fire in different ways. The initial team, this has the straight line cannon and this artillery shot. And the straight line cannon has like unlimited range, right? It can fire all the way down one column, right? As far as it can see.
Or row,
right. And the artillery can't shoot in the square directly next to it, but then anything all the way down the row, right? Well, this other squad now all of a sudden has one mech that can do no damage whatsoever on its own. But these other two have the ability to drop smoke sometimes or hit and then push. And one is extremely maneuverable and has a lot of movement speed, but only has like two health to start out with, which leads to it getting killed like really fast. And you just have to play a completely different way and think completely differently. So I had like a lot of trouble after I first moved to them, but I heard people on the internet kept saying, oh, this team's the best. I'm doing so much better with them than the default one. And then after I played like another couple matches and I kind of learned how to move these guys, I was all of a sudden doing a lot better.
One would think it's, again, that same idea that they want people to have runs. They don't want you to just like get it instantly. You want to be like, oh, I got it more on the end of that run. I need to do another one.
Yeah, and it definitely feels that way. You'll go through several runs and you'll realize that you're much more comfortable than you were to start, even without having much of an advantage over where you started from because of the way that the runs sort of start you at the bottom again. But just the growth in your understanding of the best ways to position yourself to take advantage of your strengths.
Yeah, and then you try a new team, and all of a sudden you are back to not understanding how to do anything and how to operate with any of your units again. So yep. it's a pretty interesting little push and pull there.
I assume you guys are going to keep on it at this point. It seems like it's an addictive game from everything I've heard.
Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's not as addictive in the way that like some games where you just want to constantly play them all the time. I feel like after I get a good run of Into the Breach in, I'm happy and content and want to put it down for a while. But then I'm thinking about, man, what could I do better next time? And then, you know, the next day or something comes around and I want to play it again.
Oh, interesting. It's more like a...
Because you spend a lot of time thinking during some of those games. Like, you're just you're sitting there staring at the screen for like literally 5 minutes doing nothing because you're not sure, you know, and then that's like an intense experience, at least for me. And then after all that is done, then you're like, oh man, whew.
Yeah, it's like a mental workout. Well, I guess some people do hit the gym in the same way every day, but some days you do cardio in between.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's definitely fun to put on and then, you know, in short bursts.
Nice.
But I felt that same way about FTL, so maybe it isn't that different after all.
I definitely appreciate the fact that it's not a very large game size-wise, and also they incorporated cloud saving. So I can be playing on my desktop and then jump to my laptop and not really miss a beat.
Is it a game you can play in front of the TV, or is it just too distracting?
You probably could. You probably wouldn't want to play it in front of the TV the first time you fired it up.
Hmm. Yeah. If you were going on a run with a squad you were comfortable with, you could probably do it. But I would be apprehensive about doing it. And like, because you really got to concentrate on thinking about all the positioning and stuff for a squad maybe you don't know a lot about. So it would be, you would miss the TV program while you're thinking.
Yeah, especially when it's, you know, your three mechs and six vec and you're trying to save a train that's moving across the tiles. And
God, there those are stupid train missions.
Oh, those are some of the worst because the train just goes in a straight line no matter what.
You can't stop it, huh?
Yeah, I much prefer the ones where you have to defend the launching satellites, because at least when they take off, they kill all the stuff around them.
Oh, I like the Terraformer.
The Terraformer is cool. The Terraformer is so powerful, though, it's almost too easy sometimes.
Yeah,
not that I'm complaining, but
trying to get all four sides of it can be a challenge when you realize I have two more squares to terraform to get the achievement, but my mech is on one of them.
Yeah, that's bad. And it just kills the mech outright. There's no
hope.
That's bad. Yeah. Anyway, clearly we like this game.
Awesome. Four thumbs up. Would recommend.
Yes.
Worth our time. All right. Well, now I'm probably going to break down and get it. So, oh, well. It will not be money badly spent, I don't think.
You won't regret it.
Awesome. You know what? I've been a little bit distracted, actually, from my desire to purchase Into the Breach, thankfully, by some Blizzard stuff. I don't know if you guys have seen, but StarCraft's having its 20th anniversary month this month. It's kind of like a big social media push they're having to try and get people engaged across everything, really. Every game that they have has like if you log in before the end of the month, you get this thing that's kind of StarCraft themed. So I think Diablo had like a pet battle cruiser. StarCraft 2 has like some portraits and a console or something like that. You know, every game has something. I actually got dragged into playing StarCraft Remastered because of this. I don't know if you guys picked that up. Did anybody else pick that up?
It is on my list of things I want to get back to sometime.
Yeah, I didn't either.
You could just leave it on that list for a while, I think. It's a good game, but it's a hard game. I don't know how we played it, ever.
How so?
Well, I mean, we've all played StarCraft 2. And there's just a lot of quality of life in StarCraft 2 on knowing what units are selected to which hotkeys rather than trying to remember. Being able to select more than one barracks into a group, you know?
Or groups larger than the default size.
Squads of Marines that are bigger than 12 units. So that when you make 48 Marines, you don't have to try and hotkey them all, but then run out because your barracks is on 4. And the heroes in StarCraft 2, you could always see their health on the screen. So I've lost multiple games where Kerrigan gets killed because she's in a ball of Marines and I forget where she is and then I can't see her. And then by the time I get to her hotkey, which is over somewhere else, she's dead. or, you know, macro is so much slower in that game than in StarCraft II. All in all, I mean, it's a fun game. I mean, it's always been a fun game, but I think people gave StarCraft II too much flack for not being StarCraft I.
You appreciate those quality of life improvements now, is what you're saying.
Oh, I certainly like... So what they did is they made StarCraft Remastered as a very faithful interpretation of the original game with some new stuff-ish stuff in it, like making sure that you can pick the old portraits or you can add the new portraits that kind of like make the characters look like the characters from StarCraft II to make it a little more, you know, cohesive of a game. You can pick different consoles that you look at when you're playing instead of just the default one from StarCraft, or they have a few skins in there. But beyond that, and making it run on a current computer with really nice higher res graphics, everything still functions exactly the same, with all the hotkeys being a mess like they used to be and everything else, right? Like, Marines aren't A, they're M.
Well, I mean, M for Marine. That makes perfect sense, Andrew. What's inconvenient about that?
Yeah, right. Sure. Yeah. No, it all makes sense.
It's not like that's not anywhere near where your hand would be.
Of course, yeah. It's not like my hand is always trying to macro. Anyway. Yeah. Oh, not being able to rally your SCVs. It's just a lot. Like, if you want to play it. Like, you play StarCraft II because... it's fun to play StarCraft II like a pro, even though you don't have to be. It's hard. It's like work to finish the maps in 15 minutes. And I'm amazed at, you know, how old would I have been there? 12-year-old? Yeah, 12-year-old me for having finished it. Because 30-year-old me is kind of wavering on whether or not to continue. I wish they had kind of put in the ability to say, like, I want to play this SC1 style where it doesn't have all the stuff from StarCraft II, or I want to play it StarCraft II style and, like, be able to select multiple barracks into a control group, or be able to all rally my SCVs to the minerals and stuff like that. That would have been a cool additional feature. But
I wonder if that would have just meant they would have then... just remade the maps in StarCraft II, mm-hmm, rather than allow you to switch somehow.
Yeah. I don't know. I never think about it more than that, but it would have been a cool addition.
It definitely sounds helpful.
Yeah, it's a slow one. So, you know, 3 or 4 maps in, when I started to slow down, I decided to check out some of this other stuff they're doing related to this, and that's... a huge Twitch event? Did anybody see these things also happening?
No.
So what sort of stuff?
Yeah, they're doing a huge Twitch push, and this isn't anything new, actually. I'll get to that in a second, but if you watch any streamer, you can get drops for StarCraft II, like announcer packs or commanders, or, you know, like, they have a bunch of stuff in StarCraft II now that's additional that you can buy, like skins and these co-op commanders and different announcers and all that sort of stuff. And every single StarCraft streamer, if you just watch them and you link your account, you can just get drops for the game. You have a chance to win them. And you also get, after watching for 2 hours, you get some random stuff for the game. It's like a Bob Ross themed Protoss stuff.
Okay.
That's pretty weird, but all right.
Yeah, well, it is what it is. That part wasn't the interesting part to me. And they're going to have a StarCraft II achievement race that, if you watch that on Twitch, you get different rewards. If you get chances at different rewards. And then... they're having an anniversary stream at the end of the month, and if you watch that, you get a chance at different awards there too. So it's like a huge push for engagement on Twitch by giving you monetary valued things in games, one of which I actually have won already. by just watching for the 2 hours to get the Bob Ross thing and the 20th anniversary thing. I just was trying it out, and then all of a sudden I got a notification. It's like, hey, congratulations, you have Commander Karax now in your StarCraft II account.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Nice. The other thing that I hadn't known if you guys were into, and this is kind of like connected, apparently now in the Overwatch League, if you watch Overwatch League, they're giving out league tokens for watching games. So like the stuff you would use to buy skins for the people, they're giving out like one token per every single map that you watch. So you can get, I don't know, what is it, 12 tokens a day. So if you watched for each segment of the season, you could buy one skin for free. Or if you cheer with Twitch bits, you can also get free skins. And you can get Twitch bits without paying money. You get them by watching ads. So it seems like, I don't know how you feel about this, but it seems like they're almost paying people or incentivizing people in a way that you think is money, almost like a cryptocurrency push, right? Like, here's the things that we have of value that really hold no value because they're digital, to go out and just watch streams. What other than the enjoyment of pushing their product or whatever, but what is the overall push there? Do you think that they're gaining?
So you definitely hit the nail on the head, right, with the, they're selling you or they're giving you something that has a monetary value attached to it, but actually it costs them nothing because it's a digital thing. You know, obviously someone had to, you know, some artist had to create all those skins and stuff, but you know, all of that in theory is being paid for via the Overwatch League and the sponsors and the investment in that. So then these skins and stuff are essentially just marketing for the league. So you're marketing the league more by giving people more access to marketing for the league. So I guess maybe that's the thought there. It definitely would encourage people to watch, and so their numbers look good. Like, there's always a lot of people watching Overwatch stuff, which I think there probably was anyway. I don't know that this is the reason why. But maybe that's their thought. I don't know. Get more of the Overwatch League skins out there so people are watching them. Because you can't use it just on any skin in Overwatch, right?
What do you mean?
Like, these league tokens are only good for
it's a separate currency.
Stuff?
Yeah, it's a separate currency only used for Overwatch League skins. They had to do it because the tokens get turned around and the teams get money based on the tokens spent.
Ah, got it.
Yeah, it's like a league profit sharing thing. So they were like, well, we can't do our currency because that's not profit shared, but like these league skins are profit shared. So it's interesting. Hmm. They're giving away currency that then they have to pay these teams once it's used. So they're, I know they invested a lot in putting these teams on the air and then these guys' contracts and stuff like that. And then they, I don't know, they got paid huge fees to, they got paid huge fees by these owners, so maybe that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that I know the business end behind this, and I'm sure anyone who does is absolutely not allowed to speak about it. But if you want to be a rad leaker, email us.
Yeah,
leaks podcast at WeWereGamers.com. Oh yeah, there you go. Leaks at WeWereGamers.com. We'll definitely break news.
Uh huh.
But, you know, I think it's definitely a good way to maybe artificially goose their numbers a little bit.
I was trying to think
not
of a...
Not that I really think they needed it, because I think the numbers were huge anyway, right?
They were huge the first part of the season. They definitely tailed off as people were like, okay, well, I can't watch all these matches all the time. They've gotten me into leaving Twitch open, for sure. I don't sit down and watch every match, but I've watched more matches since they added this than before.
Well, mission accomplished.
Yeah. I mean, before I was watching the Gladiators and the Spitfire matches to try and pick which team I wanted to root for, and now I just have all the matches on all the time, and if Spitfire happens to be on, I try and keep it on in the room I'm in, but that's about it. I don't know that I can think of, though, an example other than maybe baseball games when you go and you get your little freebie when you walk in, like, oh, it's bobblehead night for the Angels and I'm going to get the Mike Trout bobblehead or whatever. And that kind of gets people to buy tickets. I know I bought tickets to baseball games when they're doing like specialty hats and stuff like that. But that's the only thing I can think of.
I'm glad you brought that up because that was the first thing that popped into my head when you said that you were trying to think of parallels with sporting events where they do something to try and get you in the door. And then once you're in the door, they hope that being exposed more to the product will make you a bigger fan.
Do you think those work? I've never really done research on it. Back to the theme of our podcast of no research.
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, they're definitely trying to treat this thing as much like a real honest to goodness sports league as they can, right? And if this is one of the things that works for traditional sports, then why wouldn't it work for this other sports league thing that just happens to be about computer games?
Right.
I don't know. It's really interesting. I think it's interesting. I didn't know that they were doing this, and maybe now I will leave my Twitch tabs open a little bit also.
Yeah. You have to leave it up. Twitch has gotten smart about that. You can't just leave all your tabs running. You have to leave it as the top tab.
I got two screens.
Mission accomplished. No, I think it's fascinating, and I don't think it's bad. I just, I was shocked to see it. Overwatch League made sense to me. I'm like, okay, well, you know, these bits, a lot of people are not going to watch. I think it's like 50 bits a day, and you'd probably have to donate like 500 bits to get the skins. So a lot of people are just going to spend the $8 or $10 it is to get the bits instead of doing the ads, right? So that part made sense, but the like free tokens was kind of a shocker. And then for StarCraft,
but the bits is money to Twitch, not money to Blizzard. So I don't know, are they getting kickbacks on that? Or
I'm
like,
sure
how does that money
there's
work?
Some sort of profit sharing agreement now, because remember they were going to use their own service, their MLG. They bought MLG, remember? And the Overwatch preseason aired on MLG. And the app, and that's the only way you could watch it. And then all of a sudden, when they saw the numbers, Twitch was like, okay, put Overwatch League on our service. So I'm guessing Blizzard said, no, you don't get to stream it for free. Just like, you know, Fox doesn't get to put Angels games on TV unless they pay the Angels. I use the Angels a lot, and I don't know why.
Maybe because you live near the Angels?
I guess.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
You're very probably right. The whole thing is very fascinating to me. Well, but like I said, I'm kind of on the outside here.
It's fascinating beyond that to then have extended that into like, well, we're going to do that for all the games, you know, like next month or the month after when is the Hearthstone expansion? Oh, big news there. Yeah. We didn't even get to that yet. We'll do that next. But there's new Hearthstone expansions coming. When is the, like, watch, you know, if for every hour you watch of Hearthstone on Twitch, you get a 1 in 50 chance at a pack, you know?
Yeah, I don't know that they, well, they definitely haven't done anything like that, as far as I know, about Hearthstone. I couldn't tell you why, possibly because since they have access to a mobile phone audience, they don't feel the need as acutely, maybe. I'm not sure. But they did announce another Hearthstone expansion in the vein of the new card packs. They have made some changes this time with this coming expansion that I think maybe would be interesting to you guys, maybe as lapsed players or non-players. They have changed the number of packs that you receive in the pre-order. So normally the pre-order would be get 50 packs for $49.99 or $50, which has typically been the most cost-effective way to purchase packs. The new expansion awards 70 packs for $50.
Is that a statement?
Substantially better value for cost.
Huh.
Is that a statement about their players' base, maybe?
I think people have been complaining for a while that the cost of Hearthstone has gone up with the number of expansions increasing, and maybe this is their way of combating that cost at some point. I don't see them changing the price of a pack, though, so I'm not sure, you know, how effective that will be. But this does give people who spend money slightly more value for their money.
Maybe I'd like to see packs start to give random amounts of dust or something like that.
Well, that could be coming, since I have heard that Hearthstone has had some issues publishing updates on the Apple App Store because it is not publishing its rarity rates enough. And the way they got around those laws in China was to give you a small amount of dust along with you're purchasing a small amount of dust, and then you get a free random card pack.
Well, given the loot box changes probably coming to the United States as well, thanks to Hawaii and a couple other states, maybe we'll see that here too.
I don't know. That's all speculation, of course. But that's it's not impossible. But that's neither here nor there. The single player thing that they have announced for this new expansion, that while they have said very little about it, appears to be very Dungeon Run inspired, which I think is good news. It is a self-contained thing. It does not use your outside collection. You take 4 new heroes with completely different hero powers on some kind of adventure. And it sounds like that you loot cards to add to your deck along the way.
So kind of like a different version of the Kobolds and Catacombs one.
Yes, but in this case, you're using, you know, new heroes doing some completely different stuff. The theme of the thing is a Worgen kind of theme. So the title of it is The Witchwood, I think. So it's very spooky and kind of, ghoulish.
Nice.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
Nice. Maybe we should end on something I know we all paid attention to. Nintendo.
Oh, yeah. Are you referring to the Nintendo Direct that happened?
Yeah. Who's ready for some Smash Brothers, huh? This year, even. That's the biggest news. I just led with it.
Yeah. Fair enough. It's definitely the biggest news. There's a lot of debate. I think people are wondering, is this just a port of the other one, or is it a new one? They didn't really make it clear. I think people would want to believe that it's a brand new game. They didn't show any... They didn't highlight any characters that people had really seen. There was no gameplay at all, I guess, to be clear. I think people are very interested in Smash Brothers.
Yeah, I think they're holding their breath to find out if it's going to be a brand new game.
I feel like the Nintendo Direct was like, we got a little hint of it before, but this was the first full warning. Hey, you guys really don't need your Wii U's anymore. We're just going to republish everything, because they announced Captain Toad being reprinted, new Smash.
Captain Toad on 3DS also.
Yeah, and on 3DS, yep. Which is amazing.
Yeah. I was surprised by the number of announcements that they made for 3DS, given that they've discontinued it in Japan.
Is this maybe the last stuff that was in the pipe, and they just kind of dumped it, and they're like, here's the rest of it?
Yeah, hard to know how they're thinking about that. There are definitely a lot of people that own 3DSs, so... The audience must still be big, but I have no idea how that stuff is selling. I think people want to believe that they're just going to unify all their stuff under the Switch, but not yet.
Not yet, but I do want to believe, but I also feel like their direction very clearly is tailored to prove that that is what they're headed towards, right? They really do need to be a single console company going forward. Their player base is dwindling as people get older, I think.
Nintendo : I want to believe. Yeah, I think it's it was a good direct. It's, you know, they got stuff coming out that people want to play. Smash Brothers is huge. They announced 2018 for that. We'll see. Do you think that's going to be their big thing at E3, Michael?
I think so, although I'm still kind of expecting that at E3 they'll also drop an update on Metroid. Because I believe that is also supposed to be coming this year, I think.
It's new Prime, right?
Yes. Yes?
I think so.
I don't know.
E3. Do they usually do a big... maybe. I don't know. I feel like they do a direct and then they kind of just show stuff at E3.
So last year they did that. They did a direct rather than having their own big panel like the other guys.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's been their thing for a while. But that doesn't mean their direct won't be full of, you know, whatever their big thing is. And then whatever they show on the convention floor is just going to be a bunch of... I think the year that Mario Odyssey was coming out, it was just every single thing... Or no, sorry, Zelda. Every single thing in their E3 booth was they literally only had Zelda. It was the only thing that was there.
And Switches.
Well, Zelda on the Switch.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, my if I had to predict, my predictions would be Metroid, Smash, and an outside chance that they drop Super Mario Maker.
New hardware? Not at E3, but this year with Smash, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. I would think not, since the Switch is still so new.
Yeah, but there's not really, other than the Pro Controller, there's really not a Fight Stick branded style controller yet.
Well, people that play Smash don't really use Fight Sticks. They want GameCube controllers.
That's essentially what I meant. Yeah, maybe they've got like a GameCube controller style thing up their sleeve, right?
And if they don't, you'll see third party ones pretty quick.
True. Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I feel like this wasn't everything. I still had that feeling at the end, like, wow, that's a lot of games. They're really pushing hard on this system, but like, what else? Nobody else had that feeling?
I didn't feel like it was a full direct. I felt like it was a smaller one than some of the ones that they've done.
I guess maybe because we've already seen Captain Toad, and there wasn't any footage or anything of Smash, and we got, what, Octopath Traveler, and everybody's like, okay, the worst video game name of all time, and we've heard about it for 3 or 4 years now.
And they talked about Splatoon 2 a lot, which is... a very popular game that none of us are really into.
Sure, yeah. Splatoon is popular. Like, really, really popular.
And I think that they will draw a lot of, at least, interest in news about the new Smash by having teased the Inklings as playable characters in the new Smash.
And it looked like, what, Breath of the Wild Link as well?
Yes.
So, people will stick around for that, that's for sure. Just kind of, maybe just... left you wanting, well, maybe they left you wanting more. And in that case, maybe they did good. Nintendo, I want to believe.
Well, should we leave the people wanting more?
I think so.
Well, if you want to believe, you can send us an email at podcast@wewergamers.com, an email address. We are also on social media at @wewergamers, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the whole thing. Check us out in all those places. Give us reviews on all the fine places where podcasts are distributed. We appreciate those a lot. And we appreciate you, fine listener.
JJ, your thoughts on Captain Toad 3DS?
I think that's great. But <Dang it. laughs> for the purposes of this podcast,
I misjudged him.
Well played.